Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast still in deep thought over the puzzle of the ship of Theseus. I'm your host, David Lloyd, and in this episode we'll be debating what constitutes a sequel, and how far the definition of such has been stretched in RPGs. The catalyst for this particular topic is the newly released Bravely Default 2. Should a Bravely game with a new developer, a new director, and a new combat system still call itself Bravely 2? And, I mean, does it even matter? Helping me ponder these questions is a gentleman well-versed in the work of Leviathan, Jordan Rudick.
Now, if you had said Shakespeare, I would have said yes, well-versed, definitely. But the only Leviathan I know is from the Land of Summoned Monsters in Final Fantasy IV. And gosh, she's a pain in the butt to beat the first time you get it to him. But these are good questions. And I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk about Bravely Default 2 in a little bit more detail. I just got the true ending yesterday afternoon or the day before. So I am locked in, ready to go to talk about that one.
Well, I was doing my Thomas Hobbes homework, and I saw the title of his most famous book, and I immediately thought of you in Final Fantasy. So
I did, and I had to look up that reference as well, and I suppose I had probably come across it at some point, but I'm assuming the Ship of Theseus is a reference to WandaVision.
Oh, yes. It was on my brain. It had me thinking about it, and it just worked out. We had actually picked the topic of the show before seeing that episode, and then I saw it, and I just, like, you know, light bulb above the head. It's like, I got to put it in there.
It fits.
Works perfectly. It's topical, and it's all that. So, yeah, I'm happy that they brought that up. Fresh off of securing a PlayStation 5 and ready to play a whole lot of sequels is Bravely Default superfan Casey Gibson.
Yeah, you guys are lucky I'm here. This is time that could be well spent catching up on some Demon Souls.
Prying you away.
Yeah, no, hanging out with you guys, a close second to the PS5.
I was going to say, Perry must be pulling his hair out. For you to go from World of Warcraft to getting a PS5 now, like, he's never going to see or talk to you, so...
Yeah,
about Nintendo things.
I'm finding just like, yeah, it's like passive aggressively playing games to get Perry to hate me.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'm definitely editing it out of the podcast so that there's no way that anyone knows how many times. But I mean, where else can you be on a podcast where the host blows your introduction at least four times?
Well, you blew it five times for the PS5, so it kind of made sense.
Yeah, one for each PlayStation released.
That's right.
Yeah, that's why you should proofread scripts ahead of time. Really, really helps out.
It really was the perfect Ron Burgundy moment, though.
You're lucky. I took out Paige's introduction. Paige isn't here today, and you still had her introduction there, so I deleted it because I think you were just about to introduce her.
Yeah, and joining us also.
Yeah, that's right.
Funny enough, Paige, I think, is the one who suggested this topic too. Unfortunately, we had to switch the timing, so she's working right now. But we do thank her for supplying us with a good topic, and certainly a timely one given the Bravely Default release.
Yeah. But she'll be back next week with the big crossover episode where I'll have four introductions to butcher that week. So
that's really snuck up on us too.
You better start practicing now.
Yeah, you should just pre-record the introduction, then just play it over the speaker or something.
Yeah, he's got a soundboard. The whole podcast is actually already recorded. He just
clicking buttons.
I can't believe we're already at Paper Mario Mario and Luigi Dream Team. I think we've been talking about it forever, and it's kind of just crept up on us. But yeah, that'll be a fun game to talk about. But and certainly kind of fits in with the realm of sequels and, you know, whether we consider it a sequel or not. I guess that's the fourth game in the series. Is that right, Case?
I believe
so. Because you had two on the GBA, one on DS, then this one on 3DS. Superstar Saga, Partners in Time.
My brain is dead too. Partners in Time.
Bowser's
Inside Story.
Yep. And then
then Dream Team, then Paper
Jam. Yeah, I think that's right.
Boom. But I mean, good thing we didn't have any other games in the world to play around now, you know, to just fit in a nice 40-hour.
Especially you, yeah, that's right.
This did not work out well. Well, the PS5 was such a literally like out of left field, you know what I mean? The whole acquisition through my buddy. So I had, like I said, I just picked up Bravely Default 2, and now, like, my dream with the PS5, right, the entire time, it's like, I just can't wait to get one so I could play Final Fantasy VII. Like, that's all I want to do. And then it's like, oh, well, but I'm liking or I'm enjoying Bravely Default too much to just let it go by the wayside. So I'm going to beat that before I get into any Final Fantasy VII business. And then there's the whole 4K discussion, which it could be a June game.
Well, it's not often you're drowning in titles that that are must-plays for you, eh?
Yeah, oh, no, this is a great time to be alive. And then SMT3 is going to be announced, or I forget, do we have a date
Not
for that?
Yet. It's supposed to be spring Q2 or something like that, but...
Okay, I think I saw it just got rated.
Yeah, it got rated, so they're probably going to announce the release date soon, but I don't think we have it quite yet. I'm hoping we get a bunch of stuff from Atlas, but...
May would be perfect, and then I could ramp up to Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Boom.
May make sense. May or June, I think we could see. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, we're definitely going to have to return to it with the DLC coming with Yuffie. Like, I'm super excited to talk about that, so that'll be a good timing for us in June, I think.
Ooh, I can't wait.
You better have that 4K TV ready and set up for that one.
It could be sooner rather than later, boys.
Well, the PlayStation 5 seemingly dropped out of nowhere, Kay, so you might wake up tomorrow with a 4K TV in your bed. I don't know.
Just wait. Well, I've heard of people, get drunk and then they go on Amazon and, like, they wake up, like, 2 days later and they're like, what the heck's this? Oh, my God. Like, I had a buddy who ordered a Xbox One that way. Mm.
You know, you're giving away the excuse you were going to tell Caitlin, so you got to be careful about what you say on the podcast, you know? Oh, but yeah. I was drunk. Whoops.
Yeah, we'll edit that out like the four other introductions.
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of editing for David this week.
Yeah. Before we get into what's getting served at the pub, though, I just want to remind everyone that if you do enjoy the show, please help support it by either leaving a 5-star review on your podcatcher of choice, telling a friend about us on, you know, maybe in person or on Twitter, or financially through Patreon or Ko-Fi. But Jordan, I know Jordan found us a new Oreo flavor. So how about you kick off the drinks and the snacks with the latest Oreo venture?
I love that it's morphed into not just drinks.
It physically pains David to say that. It physically gratifies me to say that the real Battle Royale is not finished yet. So I kind of wussed out a little bit. I was going to get the carrot cake. I found the carrot cake. I saw it. It was on sale. And I'm like, I know I'm not going to like this. Like, I need there to be like a buy one, get one free offer or something like that. Or it literally has to be the last one I haven't tried that's on the shelf before I take that plunge. So, what I did was I did get a new one. I got the Mega Stuff. And these, they definitely live up to the name. Like, there is a ton of cream inside of these cookies. And I'm going to just say it right off the bat, it's too much. Like, it really is way too much. It feels like the equivalent of two Double Stuff Oreos, that much cream. It might even be more.
Dang.
But it is.
And you're already saying those were already, like, pushing the limits.
They do. They push the limit, and I think it's, now that I've had this Mega Stuff one, I'm like dying to have the Double Stuff again. Like, I need to go back to like this normalcy.
I think that's their plan, dude. They're like, we get someone to buy the Mega Stuff. They realize the normal beefy ones aren't that bad, and then
they realize
those are the ones that are in a normal rotation.
That's
right?
It. I mean, they realize how good we had it with the Double Stuff. And the Double Stuff's been around for a long time. Like, Double Stuff and the regular Oreo, I feel like those were kind of like the two flavors that they kind of launched with. And, eventually, you know, some other ones like mint and chocolate in the center, and then the golden Oreos. But the Double Stuff's been around for a long time. And, I certainly do prefer that to the Mega. The Mega, it's like, it's kind of gross, actually.
It's a novelty. It's like ordering the when you go out to a restaurant, they're like, oh, yeah, order this $80 plate of food.
Yeah.
And if you eat it in 10 minutes, you get it for free, you know? And no one ever finishes it, but it's like, it's the novelty.
You got
to try the Mega
Stuff. I feel sick about halfway through each one, because I'm like, there's still so much frosting.
Through each
there's
one.
Still so much, yeah, I know. I say that, but come on, you know me. I always take the top off, like eat the top first. I really like that kind of like, okay, now I can actually sink my teeth into the cream part. But when I do that, it's just, I can only take a little bit at a time. I'm kind of like scraping it off, and it's this whole mechanical process of, you know, getting the cream down to a manageable level before I can actually just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off and eat the whole thing.
Finally, it's like a normal Oreo.
it never gets to that point. Like, I don't think there's any way to do that. But you know what? I don't even know that I would ever have these again. Like, they're it's not that they're bad. It's too much. Like, I just don't like the cream that much. I prefer the cookie. I need a good balance, a little bit more than the regular, probably slightly less than the Double Stuff. But after the Mega, I feel like, yeah, Double is probably going to be my baseline now. And it's just, it's so just decadent and kind of, it coats your tongue. There's so much cream. Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, I'm thinking about it right now, and I'm like, I'm kind of getting a little sick. Like, I can't believe, I'm surprised. I didn't think I would be this put off by them, because I really like the flavor of cookies and cream, which is like the traditional Oreo flavor. But the cream is just out of this. It's just wild, man. Like, it's way too much.
Did you say your baseline is now the Double?
I think
stuffed?
So. I think so. So the,
dude, they played you like
they a got fit. Me. They got me. And you know that's I guess that's the way the cookie crumbles, as it were.
And I just want to real quick just to appreciate the lockstep in which David and I said each one.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. It's as if you planned it or something like that, or we planned it. yeah, but Mega Stuff, I'm definitely putting those in the bottom half. They are not going to be in contention. I still have half a two-thirds of a pack left. I'm going to try to pawn them off of my kids, but I feel bad giving it to my kids. I'm like, I don't want to give you this much sugar. Like, maybe you can have half of them, or I might scrape off. You know what? I think I'm going to be crazy enough to just scrape off half the icing or half the cream and just try to make them as close to Double Stuff as I can. I think that's where I am at right now.
Well, maybe you can make it just a little below, and it'll just be the Jordan stuff.
I'm going to try to make it Jordan stuff. Like, I'm kind of disgusted with myself talking about it like this, but this is where we are.
I was going to say, and anyone listening is going to be disgusted.
I think everyone's probably dropped off the podcast by now, but like, I think we still get the listening numbers, so that's good. We can still get the downloads, but yeah, sorry, everybody.
Since you've gone through all of the flavors, and there's a holiday coming up, I'm sending you what you should have for next week's the crossover episode.
Better be the maple one. What is that? Oh my gosh.
Oh.
So I'll just describe what I sent Jordan. I sent Jordan a picture of the Oreo cream egg.
I can't even look at it.
The Cadbury. the Cadbury. Yeah, that thing actually looks good.
I think I need a barf bag right now. Like, I'm physically ill.
It's the Easter theme. You got to get the Easter themed Oreo.
If that
egg.
Chocolate were somehow, it's not, but if it were somehow dairy free, like, I would add this to the roster and I would try it. I'll say one more thing before moving on from my Oreo segment here. I've been looking up some of the flavors that you can't really get in Canada, and Amazon is starting to sell some of them, but they're like $12 for a box, like, and I'm used to playing.
What's
I'm
money,
used to
man?
Paying like $3 for a box, so I'm like, oh, is it like at some point I probably will bite the bullet just because I've got like the brownie flavor and like I think they've got like a s'mores one. And I'm like, oh man, those could be winners. So I might just do it at some point, but I'm kind of holding out hope that Amazon puts them on sale at some point. Let's see, I told you I'm getting sick here.
Well, if you think about, you said what they're about $12
yeah.
each. So if you get four of them, no, you can get five of them for $60. So you're going to tell me that five packages of delicious, crazy Oreo flavors, I mean, you did spend $60 on Octopath Traveler.
Please. I was going to say, you know, you beat me to the punch. I was going to say $60 could buy me a new game, but I guess I could go rebuy Octopath. I don't know.
Sigh.
Yeah, well, yeah, I knew we'd have to get to that point in the episode that David's going to hopefully edit out for me here of the
Octopath
bashing.
I figured get it out early. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now we can actually enjoy the rest of the episode now that Casey and I have ruined it. So,
well, Casey, do you want to do you have a drink you want to talk about, or do you want to give us a quick rundown of your PS5 experience so far?
Well, I've got a good old-fashioned H2O with me right now, nothing too crazy. But yeah, PS5, so my buddy, he was, I guess, bored, and he was on the hunt for PS5 and Xbox, and he plays games, but he's not like the world's biggest gamer, you know what I mean? So it was sort of surprising that he was out here hunting for it, but like I said, I think he was more so bored than anything and enjoyed trying to hunt it down. But he ended up getting lucky and getting a PS5 and a Series X like within a day of each other, or a day or two. So he ended up with both of them, and then he ended up keeping the Xbox, because he just is more of an Xbox guy. And then with the PS5, he was going to sell it online. But I guess he didn't get any hits or whatever. Or like, because I guess it's funny because I know like they sell for like stupid amounts of, you know, upcharge, or at least they did around the holidays. But I think he had it listed for only like 100 or maybe 150 more or something. But honestly, I had to pay $90 for shipping on top of it. So
it's not cheap.
Yes, because, I mean, we insured it too. But yeah, so like, I think people were just like sort of turned off where it's like, you know, we don't want to do that. And then I know he didn't want to do any like in-person meetups because no one wants to get stabbed over a PS5. Mm-hmm. So he was just like talking to me and I'm like, yeah, you know, I've sort of, you know, wedding saving up for, I can't be dropping, you know, 600 or whatever it ends up being. And he was like, hey man, like, I'm in no rush. You could just pay me back. Like, whenever. So I was like, oh, okay. Let's do it. So then he mailed it to me, and it came 2 days later. And actually, I guess it came like 3 days later because it was over the weekend, because I was really hoping it would have gotten here for Saturday, but unfortunately it was Monday. So it's now only Wednesday. I played a little Call of Duty before, but I haven't gotten like I can't wait till Saturday, dude, like to wake up and just be like, all right, like, you know, crack the knuckles. Let me just play for like 8 hours today, and I can't wait. But yeah, it's great. It's the controller's really cool, like all the haptic feedback and stuff. I love the little speaker, you know, like I know the Wii had done that, and you know, Nintendo's messed around with that, but I don't know, it sounds more crisp coming from the PS5 controller.
Yeah, definitely.
And I am getting over how ugly and big it is, I guess. I just need to put like a plant in front of it or something.
You got yours vertical or horizontal?
It's funny. So right now it would be perfect if it was horizontal. Yeah. And I don't know if I was just being a dummy at the time, but my, like, the stand wasn't cooperating with me. And I was like, I don't care enough about this right now. I want to play the game. So right now it's horizontal. And if I do end up getting a new TV, like, I'm going to have to replace everything anyway. But yeah, right now it's vertical, but if my setup doesn't change, then I'm going to probably move it to a horizontal spot. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm vertical just beside my TV, but I kind of would prefer to have it horizontal. The problem is the boxes, like, or the shelves under my TV, they wouldn't fit it. Like, and I know that's a problem for a lot of people because the size of the thing, but
it's massive.
It is. I mean, I don't mind it vertically. Yeah. Like, it's kind of a nice. I like when it's got the orange and blue lights when it's running, and the lights are off. It kind of looks pretty. It kind of looks cool and futuristic. So I'm like you. I've gotten over the size and the look of it.
I do need to reshift around. Like I said, I just sort of got home because I set it up at my parents' house is where I shipped it, just because they were going to be home all day in case they sign it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I set it up because like my dad's been playing like my super old Xbox 360, you know? Like, he's like, he tells me he's like buying, he bought GTA 5, he bought Sleeping Dogs, and some other random super old games. And I sort of wanted to be like, well, like, check this bad boy out, you know? So we were messing around there. But yeah, by the time I got home Monday night, I just was like, I need to set this up and play some Demon's Souls.
You know, he's going to expect you to buy him a PS5 or an Xbox Series X for Christmas this year, right? Like, now you've spoiled him, maybe.
I just figured my brother's due to get a Series X at some point, and then he could just give the Xbox One.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
And then he'll still be like, "Wow, this is incredible." Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Like, you don't know. Like, if you're just gaming on one thing and you upgrade to the next one, you don't really. Our parents might not be thinking about like the absolute cutting edge, you know, machines that we have. But if it's an upgrade, it's an upgrade.
Well, I'll wrap up the drink discussion with I picked my beer based on looks alone because I looked at the label and had a good laugh. So the beer I went with this week is it's a Vienna Lager. It's from La True Diablo, which is the Devil's Hole, is the company, and the actual beer itself is called Tamer, which translates directly to your mother. And it has a picture of Sigmund Freud on the front. It's just a big old picture of his face. And yeah, I laughed at it and picked it up. And I was happy to find out that it actually tasted good as well. So it's, like I said, it's a Vienna Lager 5.5. So it's pretty smooth. And I've had other beer from them before, I think, not even that long ago, a month or two ago. I'm pretty sure I had one of their beers and enjoyed it. So Yeah, happy to say it both looks hilarious and tastes great. So
I was gonna say the last few weeks, I feel like you've had beers with like devil or Satan or something demonic in the title. Like, I'm sure I'm misremembering, but it just feels like those are the kind of beers you've been introducing to us lately.
Yes, getting ready for some SMT.
Yes. Yes. Mm.
Speaking of SMT, this week we are talking about sequels, and specifically Bravely Default 2. But before we get into the specific game itself, I thought we'd just talk a little bit about the 3 degrees of sequels, I guess, because there's in video games, it's not always clear in a lot of cases what actually constitutes a sequel. Obviously there's a wide range of how these play out, but I kind of came up with basically like 3 general boxes of what we typically come to see in video games. So we're going to start off with the first one, which is direct sequels. I would call this the purest form of sequel. This is basically like a story that continues on over multiple titles. And I don't know any series better suited for this example than my favorite, the Legend of Heroes series. This is like 14 games or something like that in a row where it's just this ongoing story. They're all connected. It just keeps on going. I would call this the most sequel of them all, I think. I can't think of any other video game series that's gone on for this long for this many titles.
Well, I was going to say, would you consider Ease? I mean, I guess they're always a different adventure, right? But it's always sort of, you got Adol doing his thing. And I know, obviously, not quite as many titles, per se, but they're up to 9 mainline, you know?
The only thing with the Eve series, though, is that there's not direct references to, like, usually in Eve 9, for example, like, they do reference some of the past exploits, but it's more in passing than having, like, a direct impact on the story itself. Like, things that have happened in previous Trails series titles,
they have consequences,
are directly impacting, like, it's all, like, an ongoing story, where I would say Adol is more a journal of his adventures, where it's, there isn't necessarily a direct impact from one title to the next.
Yeah, think of it like TV shows, where some TV shows, it's, you know, Monster of the Week, and there's maybe a little bit of tie-in between each episode, but they're mostly separate, versus other TV shows where every episode is building towards a bigger story. I think of something like Star Trek Discovery, it seems to do that a little bit more with they're building towards a larger narrative for the season, and by the end of the season, it kind of wraps up, whereas some TV shows, you know, it's not a journey that they're going on. Same thing with Ease, right? Like, David, I think the idea you put it well is, these are different adventures of Adol, and it's the same character, but like it's almost like his memory is kind of wiped between each one, and so you don't need to play E7 or 8 to understand E9. It might give you a little bit of a sense of how the game plays, but in terms of the story, you don't really miss out on anything by not having played the previous ones. Or I shouldn't say miss out, because it's more about what do you gain, and you gain a lot from playing other Legend of Heroes games before you play, you know, more recent ones, right? You get to learn about the characters, and it's all taking place within this one world and different parts of that world, and the history and the wars and the conflicts that are happening in that game and the politics, all of that is carried forward from sequel to sequel. I feel like I'm at a point where I can't even speak about the Legend of Heroes games anymore, because I'm not the expert that David is. But I am looking forward to playing 4 when it comes out next month on Switch. But this is the purest form of sequel, and we don't, not just the number of games in the Legend of Heroes series that are carrying things forward. We only see in any kind of game, like whether it's RPG or not, like, I think of Mass Effect with the trilogy coming out in a couple months. You get Shepard's story across 3 games, and even 3 seemed really long and kind of groundbreaking. And part of that is because it's a Western RPG, and it's not like the Legend of Heroes games have been all that accessible to a Western audience, you know, and hopefully that's changing, but we'll see.
Going on to the second bucket of sequels, I guess you'd call it, this would be more of the franchise where you're getting the same experience, but it's they're not necessarily an ongoing narrative. I guess my best example for this, or my favorite example, I suppose, in a certain way, would be the Persona series, where each of the titles is basically like the same. Like, you get a group of students that's essentially the main cast. You have your silent protagonist. The combat is always the same, you know, using the personas. Usually is taking place, like, it takes place in a school setting. Like, it's basically like you're just playing a newer version of a similar game each time.
They stick sort of real close to the formula, right? Like, they, and
yeah,
I think we've seen it evolve, you know, and especially with Persona, right? 3, 4, 5, right? That I would say sort of the trilogy of games that are very similar format and formula of how it works out. You have certain characters that are, you know, oh, that's this character of this game, you know what I mean? Like, they definitely have their sort of types, and I think it works really well. Obviously, I mean, all these games are really great. They've sort of hit that really nice stride. But I do worry with this kind of game where it's like Persona 6. We know it's going to be amazing, right? Oh, chances are that it's going to be very, very good. You know that it's going to be really great quality. But I just wonder, like, if we keep getting it without, you know, too much more of a shakeup, does it get to that point where it sort of becomes stale a little bit? You know, I get it works, but you sort of, I guess you could even say Pokemon, right, is sort of in this, mm-hmm. and I know, like, it's not mm-hmm. quite the same, because, like, you do get other, like, Pokemon in multiple games and stuff, but I don't know, it just, for me, like, the big thing with Pokemon is it's sort of stale, right? And I see they're trying to change that with the upcoming, quote-unquote, 2022 release. But yeah. I'm not even going to try and say the name. But yeah, I like it, but I just worry, like, sometimes where they might fall into sort of a comfortable spot with the series that sort of follows this kind of trend.
Pokemon is a really good comparison to Persona here, because the creatures carry over, the gameplay mechanics largely carry over, but it's a different story every time. I think it's hard to call these game sequels. It's even hard to call Persona 4 from 4 to 5 a sequel, because it's not the same characters. Yeah, you get some of the same, again, the same monsters that you recruit, and the battle mechanics are somewhat the same, and the dungeon exploration is somewhat the same, but mechanically it's where their sequels maybe, but certainly not in terms of narrative. I think that's the difference here.
Mm-hmm. I think that, like, the Bethesda titles, like Fallout and Elder Scrolls, would fall into this category as well, where they're basically formulaic in the sense that you're getting a very similar experience. Like, with Fallout, obviously, you know, between 3 and 4, you have pretty much the same. It's just, like, the location has changed for the most part. Between those types of games, like, you have Washington in 1 and 3, and then Boston in 4, but it's still, like, the same, you know, the nameless vault dweller who leaves the vault to go out into the, you know, make something of the whatever the world that they're in now that everything's been destroyed, and you know, going out collecting all the items, using the VAT system to fight, that sort of thing. Like, yeah, like it, and I mean, Nintendo's been making bank off this strategy from the beginning, right? Like, they're always the joke about redoing the same game over and over. So it's, yeah, there's, I definitely agree that a lot of these companies can run into the fact that, like, we're seeing some of these games over the last 10, 20, 30 years, like, at some point, you think they would begin to wear down or become stale. Like, and I think that's why we see, like, games like Breath of the Wild, that I think they've kind of recognized that they had to do something new.
Got to get with the times, man.
Mm-hmm. That kind of brings me to the third kind of bucket of sequels, I would say. And I think this is these are the companies, or these are the franchises that did figure out that, you know, they can't just keep going back to the well. They have to make up changes. And I think the perfect example of that is the Final Fantasy series, because you really did see early on that the Final Fantasies were following a formula. Like, you have, like, the NES era, the SNES era, the PlayStation era, but I would argue that by the end of the PlayStation 1 era, they had moved on to the point where no next title felt like the previous one anymore. Like when you went, because Final Fantasy X, which would be the first, you know, PS2 era, like that obviously was a more traditional JRPG, like the type of experience you would expect from a Final Fantasy. But then like 11 obviously is an MMO, so if we don't even so that's different in itself. But if we don't count that one, then you go to 12, and 12 is much different,
which is like a single player MMO.
Yeah, very pretty much. And then you go into 13, which was kind of almost like going back a little bit to a JRPG, but it was still had a very unique combat system. They completely gave up on the open world at that point. They did a linear experience. And then obviously 14 was the MMO again. And then 15, completely different. And they ditched the turn-based altogether and go to an action. And now it sounds like Final Fantasy 16 is even going to be different from 15 a more...
You're not even going to comment on Pocket Edition?
No.
Hey, if you're going to keep David, if I've got my Octopath, you've got your Pocket Edition.
So. I'm an equal opportunity ball
and
buster.
Casey
boys.
Has his World of Warcraft. So we're all making fun of
him. Fair enough.
Yep, we all got our pillars.
What's interesting about Final Fantasy... pointing to Final Fantasy X as the beginning of this kind of departure or this more wild experimentation with the games is that Final Fantasy X is the first one to have a direct sequel as well in Final Fantasy X-2. And then they would do that again with 13 and then 13-2 and Lightning Returns. And then with 15, mm-hmm. they would kind of experiment with DLC, right? They had kind of a season pass and then the Royal Edition and all these different kind of chapters for the different characters you meet. So they've really... not just done their own thing with sequels, but also kind of gone. They have done the Legend of Heroes path as well for sequels. They're kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to how the games are connected to one another, changing the names of creatures or the way summons work, the way progression works, the way combat works. You do kind of get a little bit of everything with Final Fantasy, and that's what I think has made it fun, but also frustrating to be a fan. That if you're a fan of an earlier entry, and then the later ones are so different from that, can you still call yourself a Final Fantasy fan? I think that's just a gray area now, or maybe a difficult qualification to have.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess, you know, I enjoy the Final Fantasy games, but, like, I by no means have, extensive hands-on time with a lot of the games in the franchise, right? So I think... as sort of like an outsider, mostly watching during like the PlayStation days where, you know, it was getting different, right? Yeah, 10, like 12, 13, all these games, like looking very different than sort of, yeah, what I was more accustomed to with the Final Fantasy series being, you know, the SNES games and then Final Fantasy VII and a little bit of IX as well, which are still, you know, pretty darn Final Fantasy, right? For me, I think at the time, I was sort of turned off, like, not even, like, showing much. Like, I don't want to play those games. They look so different and weird. But now, from where I am at this point in my life, right, I sort of like that each game is so drastically different. Like, you've got different stories, different, combat systems. Like, they're not really... holding on to anything, like they're not chained down, you know, aside from like, oh, like there's chocobos and little things that, you know, keep the continuity there, so you know you're playing those kinds of games, but it's still such a mixed bag, really. And I think, you know, if I was a diehard Final Fantasy guy, you know, I grew up PlayStation, I played every single iteration, maybe I would dislike that they changed it up so much, because you're due to hit at least one or two that you just don't jive with, right? And you can go, like, oh, I love Final Fantasy so much, but man, I hate three of the games. And then, yeah, then you start to think, it's like, well, do I love Final Fantasy, or do I just love Final Fantasy 7 and 9 and 6, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be interesting to see how Xenoblade does, because I kind of think Xenoblade is kind of the beginning of the same, that kind of same mindset. In the sense that, like, when you look at Xenoblade Chronicles, and then which is a more traditional JRPG, and then you go to Xenoblade X, which is more of a Western RPG, leaning anyway, and then you go to Chronicles 2, which goes kind of back to the JRPG. I would even say it kind of, you know, goes even further back to JRPG, mm-hmm. with kind of the looks and feel to it and that sort of thing. But still much different from the original Xenoblade Chronicles. And it'll be interesting to see what comes from the fourth title in that series. Like, are they going to build upon one of the three, or are they going to continue to just shake it up and give us something brand new again?
As a segue to our next topic, I think I'd like to kind of work off of what Casey was saying about Final Fantasy. And one of the premises for my Bravely Default 2 review is that it's a return to kind of classic Final Fantasy. And we've been saying on this podcast about, for example, Project Triangle Strategy. If you like Final Fantasy Tactics, you should buy and support that game. Well, if you like classic Final Fantasy, you should probably support Bravely Default 2, because that's where the kind of turn-based traditional classic JRPG gameplay and tropes are happening, right? It's a game involving crystals and turn-based combat and job classes and kind of really standard but effective progression mechanics. And there's even sounds and sights that remind me so much of the original Final Fantasy in Bravely Default 2. So I don't know. Final Fantasy is going to be free to experiment and probably go into this more cinematic, action-focused genre. And you're going to have the kind of branch off teams, like the ones making Octopath and Bravely Default, that these are going to be the ones kind of carrying forward those traditional NES, Super NES, I guess maybe all the way up to Final Fantasy 10 or 9 types of games. Like Bravely Default 2 feels very much like one of the early Final Fantasy games, but modernized. I don't know, Casey, if you've played enough and you would, how you feel about a statement like that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels that way, right? I mean, I'm still pretty early in the game. Well, I mean, I guess I'm probably about a third way into the game. And you said over time, right, you started to really like the combat more. Because yeah. I remember you were saying early on, correct me if I'm wrong, right, the big thing is, right, in the original ones, you would pick your whole four team moves, yeah. right? All yeah. the moves up front, and you'd see it play out. Here, it shakes it up a little bit where you're just going each person and, like, depending on your speed sort of boost or your speed stat, I guess I should say.
Yeah, you could even have extra turns ahead of other party members if your speed is fast enough, I believe. Like, it's all speed-based, but the problem is it's kind of more random as opposed to knowing exactly when your turn is going to come up. You do have kind of meters underneath the characters that reveal, they hint at when your turn's coming up, and then the enemies have exclamation points under them that tell you kind of when they're gonna act, and I think those things were added as a result of the demo feedback. But it's still, I use the expression that it's not an exact science, and it more so is in the first two Bravely games. So they definitely have overhauled it, and it grew on me a little bit because I figured out how to do the strategy of it. You know, like you have to set up certain classes that take advantage of the fact that you don't know exactly when your turn is going to be, right? So you want to have a tank that can take all of the hits. You want to have a healer. You want to this is what I had. I had like a damage dealer. I had a healer. I had a utility to like raise to add elemental attributes or to cast haste, for example.
The buffer.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I had a shield bearer who can actually protect your whole team. So for me it clicked as soon as I could figure I had enough job classes to get over the fact that you don't know exactly when your turn is going
to
be.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask you, when with your tank, right, obviously, so your Vanguard,
yeah, you do get other tank classes, but the Vanguard is the early one. Yeah,
okay. Are you rocking Seth for your tank there?
Nope. Seth is my tank is Adele. Seth is my fighter, my damage dealer. Gloria healer, and then Elvis is my all about town guy. He can do whatever he wants, but usually he's like a time mage kind of character for his main.
Yeah, we have similar, except Seth and Adele are switched.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I end up using like, you know, some buff it up where, you know, with the dance or the singing, right? I like get like attack this person, you know, I use the aggravate to bump it up. And I feel like I for how many actions I'm using on getting them to attack this one particular character, they don't do it that often. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, did you find that too? Does it get maybe a little better down the road?
I think when that was happening to me, that was part of my kind of shared frustration. But after you get past the demo part and you're a little bit closer to the halfway point of the game, maybe, or you've unlocked half the jobs, you can start to see how, you know, the different having the different ones as the main class and the subclass allows you to figure out a system that works for
the
you,
synergy.
Right? Yeah, you create more of a synergy, and you might want to learn certain abilities, so certain passive abilities that can negate some of those problems you were having before. One of the things that's really good about Vanguard is one of their last abilities. I think it's something to do with the word courage, active courage, or last courage, or something, and it allows you to transfer BP to another party member. So what I would do with my Adele is she has Vanguard maxed as her subclass, and I'm just passing BP over to Seth, and then he's got his turns are coming up more often. He's able to do, like, I'm able to go four times brave, and he can do tons of damage. So it makes grinding super easy when you can do that. And then Adele's also taking all the hits for everybody too. So yeah, it just things really open up once you've got all those possibilities. And I think at that point I stopped really worrying about my kind of nitpicking about the combat system and just started enjoying kind of how I was able to game the system, I suppose. You can kind of break it, you know. There's something fun about job class based games when you do figure out what's the best path for you. And I kind of stayed with this one team. Every time I would come across a boss fight, I would go back to my default team, no pun intended. And then I would just roll with them because that was my strongest set. And in between, when I was grinding or just exploring dungeons, I would level up some other job classes just to get the passive abilities that I could use at other times.
Yep, that's exactly what I was doing. Yep. I'm actually, I don't want to spoil anything, so I just won't say it. But anyway, I'm up to the one boss, and yeah, I was like, I went in like trying to be a little, I was like, so essentially you'd mentioned you had to go back and grind at one of the bosses, right?
Because
they were actually pretty tricky. So I took that to heart, and every time I see an enemy, I just attack it.
Yes.
Just like, I've just been grinding as I go, essentially. And so I was like, I was feeling pretty confident. I'm like, I'm pretty good here. So I went with Beastmaster, right? They have a 10% physical damage boost,
yep,
I think, at level 7.
I use it. It's great. I still use that. It's awesome.
Yeah. So that was one. And like, Adele was already pumping, dude. She was doing crazy day. I was like, oh, 10% more? Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, I was on the level beforehand. I'm like, oh, if I can beat the boss with her as Beastmaster, like, that's just like, that's automatic level up for my job, you know. And then I ended up, like, I got to the classic, like, oh, you know, where you do like 75% of the damage needed, and then they're like, well you're tougher than I thought, but I'm still gonna kill you.
Yes.
And then I lost in that phase.
Yeah,
because
every time you get to that point of the boss, they usually brave three or four times and just go nuts on you, and you got to be ready for that point almost, and that continues throughout the game. They always have those like 50% or 75% of their health is taken away, and then they kind of supercharge and go after you. And so yeah, you gotta set up for those later on.
And those tough boss battles, you're like, well, maybe they're not going to have that phase on this one, and I'm actually really close to killing them, you know? And you're like, you're holding on for dear life, and then all of a sudden they give you that phase, and you're like, oh, there's no hope.
Yeah, you do you do get a lot of those fun. I mean, that's the great thing about the series, is that risk reward of, should I default or should I brave times four because I don't really care, and I'm just going to throw everything at the wall.
Oh, I've
and
done
hope it
that
works.
Before.
I mean, you do. It's part of the fun of the game, I think, is choosing the point when you think it's safe for all your characters to just go ham and hope it works out for the best. And I had one like really, really late game fight like that, you know, one character left. I'm like, do I use my brave points, my BP to revive everybody? Or do I go for it? And I went for it and won. And oh, there's no better feeling
Jordan
than that RPGs.
All the, pushed all the chips to the center. Yeah,
it's great. Seth actually says that. I think he says, "I'm going all in," and it's great. It's great. It's like because it's truly that feeling you get in some of these games where you don't know if that this risk is going to pay off, but when it does, yeah, the feeling is awesome. So I love having that here.
That's so funny, man. And then, yeah, you do the Brave 4, and then they don't die, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, you're like, well, maybe they're not going to default like 4 times, so you're probably done for. Yeah. But, yeah, sometimes they could miss, or they might use, like, buff abilities. Like, there's some really neat kind of abilities that enemies have later on, and some of the job classes you unlock, they're, yeah, just some really nifty stuff. I don't know if it's a spoiler that there's going to be a red mage class in this game. There's a red mage class in every RPG, but red mage has a passive ability. I think it's red mage called Revenge, and it basically gives you BP 25% of the time when you get attacked. So you just put that on like your tank. And then, for me, Adele is constantly getting BP back, and then I'm funneling
it
to Seth.
It off.
Right? It's great. So, yeah, you figure out little things, like little tricks like that, and it just becomes really really a joy to play.
I do want to talk real quick about the actual job system and how much I love it, but did you level up, because I was talking to Alex Kalafi the other day. Mm-hmm. He actually, this is his first Bravely Default and his first RPG with like a job system like this,
oh,
and
yeah.
He's really enjoying it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was super happy to hear that. But we were talking with the freelancer, like we were like, I wonder if it's just worth it to grind up to level 10, get that 1.7 times the JP job points as you normally would, if that would be beneficial, because it would definitely take some time, but you would save so much more time down the road.
Yeah.
And I was just, I haven't done it, but I was thinking, like, I wonder if it would actually be more beneficial.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So I had an interaction with someone on Twitter today when I posted about hopefully sharing my review on Friday of the game. And he said that he's about 20 hours in and kind of somewhere in chapter 2 because he was doing that exact same thing. He was raising all of his characters as freelancers to a high enough job level so that they had the passive ability to earn more JP. So I did that with Seth. I only went to the 1.2, which I think is maybe level 7 or 8 or something.
I think
you
it's 7.
You have to go all the way to 10 or 11 or 12 to get the an extra boost. The problem with doing any of this is that it really only helps you for grinding because if you don't want to leave on those JP boosting passive abilities.
Passives, yeah.
Because the problem with the 1.5, the last one you get, the 1.0 to get 1.7 in total, it takes up actually 3 of your passive slots in all. So you get one for the 1.2, and then you take up 2 slots for the 1.5, and it stacks to 1.7. But it just takes up so much of your passive slots that you can't really go through the game sacrificing, or at least later in the game, you can't go through it sacrificing 3 passive slots. I found it very difficult to do that. So it's good if you really want to. If your goal is to, like, master all the classes, if, like, that's your kind of, like, little side goal of playing Bravely Default, you're going to master all the job classes and just kind of min-max everything, then I'd say go for it. But just in terms of beating the game, I don't think you need the 1.2 or even the 1.7. And I'll tell you another reason why. Grinding for JP can be pretty easy when you stack fights together using the food items, like the monster bait, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You use the monster bait, then you can stack fights, and you'll get multipliers.
Then you get the, yep.
You get the multipliers on your JP anyways. So I would just do that if you want to grind. And second of all, you actually get a lot of the JP granting items in the game.
The buns or what? Was it like a JP bun or something?
So
like
there's stat buns like HP bun, attack bun.
Oh, maybe
bun,
that's what I was thinking.
And then there is experience point like orbs or tokens or something. And then there's JP tokens as well. So the large size one, I think, gives you like 800 JP. So you can get a bunch of those from the putting your system in sleep mode and doing the sending the ship sailing, which is one of the little kind of mini features built into it, which I appreciate. But you also just find a lot from side quests and just from traveling around in treasure chests. So you can get a lot of JP in this game without having to worry about maxing Freelancer, I'd say.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I was thinking maybe the 1.2, if you're going to do anything, would it you know,
yeah, go,
it'd
go,
probably
go for
take
the
same amount of time to get the 1.2 as it would to get, you know, the additional 0.5, you know?
Yeah, to level 7 or 8, it's, I think it caps out at maybe 600 or 800 JP per level. But when you get to, like, level 11 to 12, I think is 1900. So getting those last few levels can take a long time. But yeah, going to 7 is pretty easy, I think.
Yeah, but I guess, David, do you know much about the job system with Bravely Default?
Not in this one. Man, when did we play the Bravely Default for the podcast? It must have been over a year ago.
Feels
now.
Like it, yeah. But you played the demo for this game, though, right? Like, at least the first demo.
Yeah, I didn't get too much into the job class stuff. I was kind of turned off with when they got rid of the turn system, like having everyone do their full turn.
Mm.
The one question I do have as someone who's not taken the plunge yet and has been kind of
hesitant
about doing it is that on the fence is the how is the writing in this game compared to the writing in the first one? Like, I know Bravely Default, like, one of the things that stood out to me was it was kind of a playful, like, a lot of it's cringe inducing in a lot of cases. The story kind of went bat crazy, you know. Are these the same? Like, does the story and the writing feel like the original one? Because I know we've got a new developer, we've got a new director. Like, if you called this, you know, Project Job Classes, would you play the game and be like, "Well, no, this is Bravely Default"?
Can you call the episode title Project Job Classes? Because I think we've hit gold there. So I made the reference to the original Final Fantasy, and I'll do that again. I think the story and the writing reminds me a lot of that game. It's not as silly or not as lighthearted. Like, some of the character interactions are. This is a much more serious and mature story, I'd say, overall. Some of the events that happen later, like, it's very surprising. I don't want to say anything. I'd rather people just discover it. But I'll tell you that the twists in this game, they're not as kind of just ridiculous. They're more like thematically or, you know, kind of tonally abrupt or maybe surprising, I should say, not unsurprising. Some of the interactions that you have and the people you meet, the events that take place are, yeah, they're kind of a left turn from the fantasy, you know, happy-go-lucky stuff that you've seen before in other Bravely games. So I think the writing's better here. I think the voice work is pretty solid throughout. Most of the characters have very, very solid voice acting. And yeah, I didn't find it as cringeworthy. Like, there is a little bit of that, but it's not as much of a constant, I would say, in this game. That was my, at least through my time with it, that's what I would say. If I can add one more thing, there are some side quests that are really, you can't always tell right away, but generally, if a character in your party gives you has a side quest available for you, it's going to have a little bit more story to it. And some of these are really, really heartfelt and charming, actually. Like, interactions between Seth and Gloria and Elvis and Adele, kind of the two natural pairs of the game, which we've got in other Bravely games, too. It's not so much necessarily a relationship between them always, but more like just the history. Or, like, you know, what's your background? Where did you come from? How did you get here? And, yeah, they're cute, and I really liked those, actually. So I would say anyone playing right now, so Casey, you as well, if you see side quests given out by characters in your party, go and do those, because there's going to be a story payoff that you'll probably really get into there.
Yeah, I've done a few, I feel like, where you get with, like, with Adele getting, like, how they met up and, like, sort of where she was coming from and, you know, how, like, the origin story of them, which I thought was cool. So, yeah, no, it definitely doesn't feel, yeah, sort of as lighthearted. And, again, you know, I'm probably about a third of the way through, so obviously Jordan's going to have more context on that, but not in a bad way. I mean, I sort of like the cringiness of some of the earlier stuff. Like, I almost like it in the sense, like, yeah, you're like, oh, come on, you know. But, like, lighthearted fun, right?
It
good
is,
stuff.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
No, I mean, I think they've done a good job here. It, like, sticking to the roots of what the game is. Like, it definitely, to me, having no context, except the three games in front of me, you know, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, this one, sure, they're doing different things, and obviously, like, you know, we've talked about the combat system's different, and, you know, some of the tonal stuff, but I don't think it feels like alien to the franchise at all. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, things have shook up behind the behind the scenes too.
I mean, that seems like as good a segue as any way to talk about whether we think this is really a sequel. Like, Casey, how do you've played enough, I think, to be able to kind of categorize this game as one of the three types of sequels we talked about. So what group or what camp would you put Bravely Default 2 into?
I guess it sort of feels like a Final Fantasy to me. That Bravely Default and then Bravely Second is sort of like the X and X2. You know, like, or yeah. 10 and 10-2, yeah. You know, where it's like, you know, a lot of the, like, everything's, you know, boom, and this feels like a completely new iteration, and I hope they continue to do this moving forward. Like, I hope Bravely Default 3 is a whole new cast of characters and a whole new world to explore. But yeah, that's what it sort of feels like to me. It's, you know, there are definitely elements that are similar, you know, like the four crystals, you're doing this, like you said, sort of the two natural pairings within your group and how you've all sort of come together like that. But yeah, I mean, it feels Final Fantasy to me, but I guess we'll see when we get the next iteration. But I'm actually going to be curious once we get, like, sales figures come out to see how well this game's done.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think everyone that's played Bravely Default in the past, or not everyone, but, like, you know, RPG fans are definitely going to know about it, going to be excited about it, but it's not really an easy sell, I feel like, to someone who's not super into the pulse of JRPGs, where, you know, a Final Fantasy game, you hear Final Fantasy, you know what it is, more or less, even if you're not, you know, huge into the series, and it might be something you'd, you know, hey, maybe I'll try something different, but Bravely Default just sounds weird,
yeah.
You know, sure, when you see it, you'll sort of have a good idea of what's going on. But, you know, if I'm like, hey, you want to pick up Final Fantasy VII or you want to pick up Bravely Default 2? You know, like, people are going to gravitate to the... Which one? I forgot what I said first. The former?
Final Fantasy.
I think I said Final Fantasy first, right?
I mean, so here's the thing. I have 2 points about whether it's a sequel or how that's affecting it. I saw some sales figures for Japan. Don't quote me on this, but it looked like this game had a worse debut week than either of the other two Bravely Default games. Different console, obviously, so it's hard to compare. But I also saw a lot of discourse around Bravely Default 2 being, I haven't played the first one. Do I need to play the first one before I play this? And so I think the two, in a way, might be hurting it. Given that it isn't really a continuation of any narrative, they should have just called it Bravely Third. And I know that kind of sounds like a joke, but honestly, I think that the marketing of it as Bravely Default 2, when there's already a Bravely Second, I think it's confused people and maybe turned them off because the first two Bravely games on a different console, there's going to be a lot of new Switch owners that haven't played a Bravely Default game before. And to come in and say, oh, I'm going to play Bravely Default 2 without having played the first might be a misstep, right? I know Xenoblade Chronicles 2 kind of got past that, but I mean, it's not always going to be the same way for every RPG, considering RPGs are generally more niche as a whole. So, I think you're right, Case. I think it is somewhere in the Final Fantasy camp, although parts of it make me feel like it's kind of in the Persona camp as well, with the way that they kind of tell that similar story of the crystals being out of balance and a great kind of evil power rising that you have to take out. And then, yeah, the job class system, obviously very kind of unique to the system, the way they do it, which I think is really effective. But is it really a sequel? Probably not. And that's why I think they might have gone, maybe should have gone with a different title, even Bravely Default, subtitle something, you know, switching it up. I something dumb, who cares? Like the game has a dumbness to it that's actually kind of charming, and I appreciate these games for it, the kind of absurdity. Even if this game moves away from that absurdity to some degree, I would say, is it really a sequel? No, I don't think it is.
Call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
This is a perfect segue into our last call for this week, which is looking at the strategy of utilizing a brand to sell a game. Like, we all grew up in an era pre-internet, where a lot of the times, like, the name is what sold the game. Like, how many games had the title Final Fantasy in it simply just to catch people's eye on the shelf. You know, the back in the day, you could just couldn't go on a computer and be like, "What's this Final Fantasy Legend game?" and then find out that it really is nothing to do with
Final Fantasy Adventure, Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. Yeah, we've seen tons of games do that.
Dude, I got duped.
Yeah,
I got duped with Final Fantasy 12 Revenant Wings for the DS. I was like, oh, baby, Final Fantasy game, let's go.
Final Fantasy The Spirits Within is probably the best example, right? A movie that had nothing to do with Final Fantasy and totally tanked because it kind of misrepresented what it was in a way. And not that that's the only reason that it tanked, but, you know, just a way of kind of misappropriating that name, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious now that we're in the internet age and there's always, like, if you're on Twitter or if you're on social media, you're always hearing about everything, like, we've known about Bravely Default for over a year, or Bravely Default 2 now for over a year. And like you said, a lot of people might see the 2 in that and then think, you know, I didn't play 1, so I'm not going to bother. Or you get other people who are thinking that, you know, they've heard all the things about how it's not the same as the first Bravely, or they see that the developer has changed and think that it's not going to be as good. I mean, are we getting to the point where it's not making sense to when you have these kind of departures in these types of games to use that brand anymore? Like, obviously Bravely Default, that was they used that brand because people were used to it, they wanted to put players from that owned the previous ones to buy this one too. Like you said, would it have made more sense for them to go with a brand new, like, not even like a subtitle, like, not even Bravely Default, just call it Project Job Class.
Like, you can't, though, with this one. Like, you can't. It's too... there are similarities there. Like, everyone would say this is a Bravely game, right? That there's enough to see a connection. Even if it's not a direct sequel, I think it is in a realm of sequel or sequelism or something. I don't know what we want to call
sequelism.
It. But there is a connection between these games. They do share a DNA, which is why I say it does kind of fit in the realm of the Persona and the Pokemon type of sequel as well. But, you know, if your question is using this brand more make me more likely to purchase a game, yeah, I'm kind of a sucker for sequels. Like, I don't love to admit that about myself. Like, I do want to give new IP a chance, and I do get excited about new IP, but I also like continuation of stories. I like getting attached to characters and seeing, you know, updates on them, or seeing how the worlds and mechanics are going to evolve from one entry to the next. So, yes, seeing Final Fantasy put on something will and did make me buy games that I maybe would go on to regret. And if they do another game and they call it Bravely something, I might pay more attention to it than if they had changed the name entirely. And that's, again, I don't love to say that, but it's just kind of the way I've always followed video games. I got sequelitis, I guess. Sequelitis, whatever.
I think it's sort of a double-edged sword from a marketer's point of view, right? Because, yeah, they're going to slap on a name you recognize on a game, maybe if it even isn't, you know, 100% sort of within that vein. Because, yeah, it's going to get the people like Jordan, like myself, like I'm sure David too, right? I love this series. I love these games. Sure, I know it's not a mainline series, but it's tangentially connected. There is that thread that is going to keep me, you know, or I shouldn't say keep me interested, but it's a thread that's going to pull me in that I know I'm going to jive with, and let's see how the rest of the game pans out, right? But it could also be a bad thing because, say, you are trying to get into a new franchise and I mean, how many times have you looked online and you see, like, oh, I've never played any Final Fantasy games. Where should I dive in? Do I dive in at 6? Do I dive in at 7? Oh, maybe I should try some of the newer games. And then, you know, the cogs start going and you end up fizzling out. And you go, I don't know what, you know, choice paralysis, right? Like, there's too much here for me to even get in. Like, it's too late. You know, I don't know where to begin. So I see how it could be give or take depending on, you know, the person's personality, right? Like, how they're going to react. And I guess, you know, for a game like Final Fantasy, it's good because the fan base is huge, you know, enormous. Bravely Default, definitely a bit more niche. Maybe it is, you know, maybe it ends up being a detriment a little bit, you know? So I guess it sort of is like you got to, you know, look at all the factors, right? But I'm totally, you know, I'm like Jordan, you know, if I see a game that is, you know, a part of a series or a, like I said, I mean, I remember I picked up Dragon Quest Heroes Rocket Slime, you know, would I have picked up a game just called Rocket Slime and, you know, it, instead of the cute little slime I recognized from Dragon Quest, it was just more of a blob, you know, like, probably not, you know, and I ended up picking it up and I really enjoyed that game, actually. So I think, I don't know, I don't think it's a bad thing, and I think a lot of people, you know, tend to go with what they're familiar with, and you know, if you see a title on a game and you like that game before or other entries, you know, you're going to gravitate to it and maybe just find yourself liking something you didn't even know you wanted, you know?
So I have a question. Like, Tokyo Mirage Sessions bombed, both on Wii U and Switch. But you hear so many people talk so much affinity about
it. It is a good game.
It's a really good game.
If they had named it Shin Megami Tensei / Fire Emblem.
Absolutely.
You think so?
Yep, I think it would have sold better for sure. Because I bet you a lot of the sales came from SMT fans, you know, for sure. And if it was actually called SMT, I feel like the other half of those fans that were hesitant would have been like, well, it's part of the series, you know, where it stands now, it's like, well, it's not really part of the series at all.
It's also like one of the worst. It's comically bad as a title. Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE. What does that even mean? Like, it's trying to be too cute, right? Sharp FE, Fire Emblem, Tokyo Mirage Sessions TMS, or in reverse, SMT. They should have given it like a more plain title, like something more recognizable. Like, I think that was, you know, Nintendo going out on a limb or Atlas going out on a limb, and you're just trying to be too cute with it. That is a fantastic game, but that title doesn't do it any favors.
No, not at all.
Yeah, it's just interesting how much sway a brand can put on you, really. Like, I guess it's the guarantee with video games being so expensive now. It's almost like
the stamp of
like
approval.
A guarantee sticker. You're guaranteed to enjoy this game because you enjoyed the previous ones. I guess it's a fair to for people to kind of gravitate towards a guaranteed good time, I suppose. I'm just curious, in like the internet age, will that start to not have as much of an impact now because we know so much about games before they even come out?
I think they're the big names are still going to pull the big audiences at the end of the day, you know? You know, if we saw Nintendo say, I mean, I can't even think of any just random, like, oh, yeah, a new Harvest Moon game, but like, or a new Story of Seasons game, like, oh, okay, like, yeah, people are going to decide. But if it was like Nintendo's having a Final Fantasy Direct, you'd be like, wait, what? And people who don't give a crap about RPGs or even Final Fantasy would be tuning in live just to see, like, what is going on here.
I think you just gave David a heart attack, Casey, so congratulations on that. quitting his job, and, you know, he's got to make time for that. Yeah, I kind of want to reference back to when I mentioned Shakespeare at the beginning of the podcast, and the expression, one of his quotes from Romeo and Juliet is, what's in a name? And maybe in Romeo and Juliet, a name didn't really matter, but I think here it really does. And the titles for games, you know, developers spend, you know, lots of money kind of marketing and doing research and trying to find out titles that are going to attract people. And brands and series and names do really matter. I think we'll all, you know, kind of see how that's true in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that SEO?
Yep. Got to hit it.
Got to get those clicks.
So I think that kind of takes us to the end here. Gosh, we had a lot of good segues today. Obviously, we've got our Mario & Luigi Dream Team episode coming up next week, so stay tuned for that. Another crossover with the boys of the Talk Nintendo
the Dirty
podcast.
Mage, baby.
Casey and Perry. Perry is beside himself with our PS5 and World of Warcraft talk, but now we've got a game that he really likes. I keep wanting to call it Paper Mario Dream Team.
I know.
Why do they have to do that crossover at the end? It just screwed me up so much. But yeah, so we've got that coming for you next week. Casey's on the Talk Nintendo podcast every week. You can hear that on Thursday on your podcast app of choice, and they're also on Twitter at Talk Nintendo Pod, Talk Nintendo POD, as Casey likes to say. I'm going to take all of your material today.
I don't have to do a thing.
Yep. You can find the Thirsty Mage on Twitter at the Thirsty Mage, and David is at Filtered Gamer. I'm at Wristman64. You can check out my review of Bravely Default 2, hopefully posting on Friday. So if you're listening and you're a Patreon member, you can check it out tomorrow. I think if I've got my timing right. If you are just listening to this normally on a Sunday, you can go to nwr.com or nwrtv on YouTube and find my review there. I'm going to knock on wood here just in case something comes up. But that's the plan. David, reviews for The Thirsty Mage?
We just posted a review on our website for Nosha. PlayStation Vita port. That's basically a werewolf-styled social deduction game, kind of like Among Us, but for one player. And highly recommend it. So if you want to check out the review for that, it is on our website.
I'm just happy. I'm happy you pronounced it correctly this time. I thought for sure we'd get another Kenosha, but good job by you. I think that'll take us to the end of this episode. So thanks everybody for listening. You leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. That would be fantastic. I would love to get some visibility out of that.
Five stars only.
Come talk to us on Discord.
Well, I think we'll accept 4-star reviews, but
nope,
it's got to be
five or bust.
It's got to be because only 4 stars if you didn't like my review of the Mega Stuff Oreo. That's all.
We're getting no 4 stars. They're all 5, baby, with that review.
Thanks again for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week for. I was almost going to call it Paper Mario again. I don't care. I'm just going to call it Paper Mario from now on. Paper Mario Dream Team. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Adios.
Bye.
I gotta get to the